welcome one, welcome all, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 64 is coming up right now with you, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, the podcast brought to you by a store in Manchester called The Portal, Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Howdy, everybody. My name is DeBrant. I am your host for this episode, which I am entitling, You Can't Stop the Change Any More Than You Can Stop the Suns from Setting. So time presses on, and stores need to adapt, and we're going to talk about the good things you should have at an FLGS these days, and what that should look like for you, your local store. So that will be our topic for the day today. Hey, we're a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. We are super happy to be associated with all those fine folk making videos, making podcasts, conventions, all sorts of things. Just a great time to hang out with them. We are looking forward to PAX Unplugged, to being with Dice Tower contributors, as well as other people. Should be an awesome time down there in Philadelphia. So that should be exciting in November. Woo! All right. Here we go. Welcome, welcome, everybody. So let's jump into some events and things that are coming up. So this weekend on Saturday is the Silk City Board Gaming Group. They've got a ton of post-Gen Con hit games for you. So that should be awesome. So that's at the Manchester Public Library. And you want to check out that event from noon to 4:30. As always, we sponsor the event. So Brian will be there. I will not. Sadly, I am going with my wife. Nope, not sadly. Very happily, I am going with my wife to New York City to celebrate our 9th anniversary. So that is where I will be. Obviously, I would be at that event otherwise. And whatnot, but should be a good time. Anyway, so definitely check that one out. That is coming up. Then the other big day is November 4th. November 4th is going to be the Extra Life charity event auction, and we will get Harrison and or Gary on here prior to that to tell you more, but that's going to be a 24-hour event raising money for Extra Life, November 4th, so set that date on your calendar. And whatnot. I'm getting excited. I'm having a big weekend at my house, VonnerCon, as I call it. I have a bunch of friends and whatnot over, and game for 4 days the weekend after this. So I'll probably do a little report from all the things we did and the events there and whatnot. And there's a bunch of store people that will be coming as well. So that should be a good time. I'm going to run through a couple games that I played. I'm going to give you a full review here on Whistle Stop. But before I do that, I'll talk about a couple other games that I've gotten to play lately. And then we'll jump into our topic. Probably a short episode. Whew, my life is busy. It's crazy. I'm getting ready. This is Tuesday night. And I'm getting ready Wednesday to go from 5:30 when I wake up straight through to 8:30 at night with events. So, so I got to make a short episode here and get myself to bed and have some good sleep. So, bringing lots of good information. So, let me talk about a couple games I've been playing. I have been playing Master of Orion, the board game. This is from Hobby World and Cryptozoic, brought this over to America. So this is based on the old computer game. And many an episode ago, over a year ago, Tom Vassell talked about this on ours. He had played it and really enjoyed it. So I was excited for this to come to the U.S., I think he had played the Russian version, not sure about translation and all that. But finally came out, so I've got a chance to play it a couple times now. 3, I believe. So what's happened in Master Orion, it's basically a card game, kind of a 4X, really engine-building game. I kind of call it Inverse Race for the Galaxy. I'll talk about that in a second. So what happens in Master Orion, you get a set of cards, and every turn you look and you have resources and you see where is your furthest resource and you exert. So exertion gives you a certain number of action cubes as well as a bonus or penalty based on how far you went. So if you get 5 action cubes, you're going to get a penalty. If you get 3, you're going to get a bonus. But of course, you're getting less actions on your turn. And actions are probably the best thing to have. So there's that piece. So then you got a hand of cards, and you got seven different actions you can do. So you can attack another player, you can play a card from your hand by spending resources into your tableau, play a card into your tableau. You can discard a card to gain resources from that card. You can discard cards to get a leader from the center of the table that you'll have permanently for the rest of the game. You can trade types of resources. What is that other one? And there's another one that I can't think of right now. You can gain, you can do propaganda and gain morale. Morale, yes. On the side of your board. If your morale ever goes to zero, the game runs out. If anybody fills their board with 20 cards, you basically build four systems of five cards each. The game will end because the tableau is full. Otherwise, it's eight rounds. Can play two to four players. And so that's what you do on your turn. You're just going through, you're drawing cards. Oh, that's the one I missed. Research, draw two cards. And you're just playing these cards, playing them to your tableau. Trying to build an engine, score points each round. There's end-of-round points, there's end-of-game points, there's start-of-round points, there's points within. When you attack other players, you get points. When you play cards, they're worth points at the end of the game. And then it's all about how they combo. What's interesting here is you build an engine, but then you can only play four cards, and then you have to cover those cards. You can cover it any time, so you can do a little different than that. So you basically build an engine, and then you kind of quasi-deconstruct or adapt your engine. You change what you can do to be able to play more cards. So it's kind of interesting making those choices, but it's also kind of forced. Like, ooh, I like my engine, but I can't just stop here because I need to keep getting points and playing more cards. So it's kind of interesting in that front. So this game's all about the cards. So where I call it Inverse Race for the Galaxy, if you've played that before, if you haven't, may not help you, but Race for the Galaxy, the complexity of the game is tricky, like all the exactly what does each action do and how does everybody select and getting the order of that. Whereas this is really simple. You take one action on your turn, you place a cube, what you want to do, and you do the action, and they're all very simple. They're all very intuitive. But then once you play cards, they're usually not too confusing. Now, the iconography in Race for the Galaxy is confusing. In this one, though, the cards are complex, and they work together, and they give you bonus actions. So I would argue this deck of cards is more complex than the deck of cards in Race for the Galaxy, but then, so they kind of switch. The cards are more complex, but the game is simpler, whereas in Race for the Galaxy, the game is more complex, but the cards are simpler, is kind of the idea. So it kind of falls in between those. It's really trying to be the 45-minute to 1 hour, like Terraforming Mars. Race for the Galaxy kind of is that long. It's usually a little shorter, and Roll for the Galaxy usually is when everybody knows what they're doing. So I think it succeeds. I have a lot of fun with it. I think it works well. I think there's enough interest there. I like that idea where I have to build the engine and then take it down, as opposed to just build the engine and it is what it is. I thought that was clever. I could see it falling by the wayside. Roll for the Galaxy is absolutely beloved. Same with Race. And you could just play those and kind of get the shorter feel. And Terraforming Mars is absolutely beloved. And you could play that and get the feel. So I wouldn't call this a must-own for people. But if you want a new flavor of that, it's great. It's super good. It is funny because it feels very Euro. You're playing all these cards, and even attacking players as they lose one morale, not a big deal. You gain victory points and spend resources, almost like you're spending to get this. So it's like, oh, it's a pretty Care Bearish game. And then all of a sudden you drop these cards that are like, they have to discard a whole bunch of cards and lose all this. And all of a sudden there's cards that are super nasty. So it does kind of throw that at you all of a sudden if that's not your cup of tea. That could be a little different there. So anyway, that is Master of Orion. Next up, I got to play Raddus, I believe, twice now. So it's a pretty old game, like 2011, 2012. This is from Z-Man Games. So Raddus is really an abstract game with a pasted-on theme, but the theme is great. It really actually works perfect, although you could probably find another one. But the theme is, you know, welcome to Middle Ages, Europe, and got a map of Europe on the board, a bunch of different regions, and the Black Plague is going on. And so you've got all these rat tokens and cubes. So you're basically putting cubes in different regions on the board. They're not quite countries of Europe, but, you know, basically that idea. And you're putting cubes in these regions, and at the end of the game, you're trying to have the most cubes on the board. And whoever has the most cubes wins and ties, I can't remember. And so you put the cubes on the board to start, and then on your turn, it's really simple. So there are a bunch of character cards, oversized tiles, almost tarot size. You could take one of those. You can even take it from another player. There's no cost or anything, which gives you a bonus action. Then you get to place cubes on the board. So when you place cubes, you can place as many as the rat tiles. So every space starts with a rat tile or little circular disc face down on it. So you got one per region, so you can put one cube in there. But you can put as many as there are. So there may be two or three on later turns in a region, in which case you could put more cubes. And then after that, then you have to move the plague piece. So you move the plague pawn. When the plague pawn gets somewhere, if there's a rat token there, you place another rat token. If there's two or more, you place two in adjacent regions. And that is basically the main driver of the game. There's a pool of rat tokens based on the number of players, and when those run out, the game is over. So every turn, you're moving this plague pawn and placing more unless you move to an empty region. Then if you move to a region that has rat tokens and player cubes, you flip the rat tokens, and they have a little threshold. If there's three or more cubes in this region, then the following things make you lose cubes. So whoever has the majority, everybody loses a cube from there, or it's going to have one of the six symbols for those characters. So if you happen to possess like three characters and everybody else has one, you're three times as likely to have to lose a cube in that region. And it's all simultaneously evaluated. So if you have everything on there and the majority, you may just wipe everything out like the plague would. If there still continues to be cubes, you continue to flip rat tokens. That's it. That's the game. Then you just go around doing the same thing. So it's totally an abstract game, trying to move these cubes around. And the character builds are cool. So the king lets you move a cube to the palace. It's fully protected. So you just move a cube from the board over there. You've scored a point for the end of the game. And then a bunch of ones that let you place more cubes, move those around, look at move the rat tiles around, look at them, move cubes on the board, a bunch of different things. So played it two players. Really cool. It was very back and forth. I think it ended up being like 15 to 14. Then I got to play it three player with Brian, my buddy Jeff. And it ended up 17 to 12 to 10, but you have 20 cubes to start. So I had 17 on the board at the end. It felt a little strange. Like in that one, we were flipping tokens and they said 6+ and there'd be two cubes there. It felt more random on those flips. For some reason, it didn't feel that way. We didn't really take the witch who lets you look at the tiles. So that might have been a better idea in terms of all that. So, not sure, but I'm definitely looking forward to more plays. Have the expansion. I think there's two expansions, and I have one of them. So it can play five or six players, adds more characters, adds some cards to help you protect. So you have a little protection, because I think it's going to get more chaotic with that many players. So they have things to help you protect and maybe score some other points. So, first play, great. Second play, okay. We'll see where it goes from there. But I had heard good things, and it's nice and light and quick. It says 45 minutes, and so far it's been one of those games that's played faster than 45 minutes. It was fun at 2. I think it plays all the way up to 6 with the expansion, so I'm going to try to get a bunch of those games in because it's pretty quick and see where Radis goes for me there. All right, finally, I told you I'd give you a full review of Whistle Stop. So Whistle Stop was sent to us by Bezier Games, which is awesome. See the last episode where we were talking about demo copies and things that can really help out at the store and with the podcast. But again, always appreciative, not an expectation by any means. I mean, I suppose we were talking about how like it would really be helpful to get these things ahead of time to help increase sales and whatnot and have the companies work there. But again, it's ideas and suggestions. We're always appreciative of companies sending us games. We understand they don't have to. That is not where we're going with that. So anyway, Bezier Games sent this copy to me, Whistle Stop. This is a Scott Caputo game, and what you are doing is it is a pick-up-and-deliver train game. So you have all your trains on the eastern side of, I guess, the world. I would call it America, but it's not really America. Hextiles, and you have to get them to the western side while picking up goods and dropping them off over there, and you score points. Most points in the game wins. The game will go a certain number of rounds, based on how many players are in the game, and it'll play 2 to 5 players. So everybody starts putting those trains, and then there are random hex tiles. So you've got a bunch of just regular terrain tiles with random tracks that go in all sorts of crazy different directions on these hex tiles, but they always exit out every side. And then you've got some special tiles. So special tiles might give you coal or give you whistles, or allow you to trade goods, or just let you, the general store just lets you pick up any good. So you've got 3 basic goods and 3 rare goods of each type. 3 different types. So that gives you 6 total goods. So what are you doing on a turn? Okay, really simple. You're going to get 2 coal at the start of a round, and then you can play up to 4 actions. Each one costs a coal. So you start the game with some coal, and there's ways to generate coal. There's a coal mine, and you get 2 coal if you land on that space. So there you go. So you play a coal, and you can move a train forward a space. And they go all sorts of crazy places. You can't move backwards, but you can move like up and down in line. And then what's really neat is you have a hand of tiles. And if you move off the board, because the whole board isn't filled up, the center is basically empty. So you've got to build the track to go east to west. And so when you're going to run off a track, you can place a tile, move, and then move on to that, pay to move, and then move on to that tile. So you're deciding what the world is going to look like. Super cool. And then when you get to the next city, they typically give you a cube. So they give you some cube, whether it be rare or basic, and you get to pick those up and you collect your cubes. So this is what you're doing, and then you refill your hand at the end of the round. So that's definitely like one of the key fun parts. So then when you kind of move to the center, you'll see different areas where you can gain resources. You may also see ones where you can gain stock. So it'll say, oh, turn in these 2 cube colors and gain a stock. And there's 5 different stock companies. And so you take a stock, you get points immediately. And then at the end of the game, whoever has the most stock in each of those gets 15 points. So there's 75 points up for grabs right there. Ties are really easily broken because it's whoever took the stock first, and they're all numbered like 1 through 5 or 1 through 6. So you know who has the lowest numbered stock to break those ties. So that's really simple. Then when you get to the far edge of the board, you'll move, and it's kind of a final play. So there's 2 options there. One is trade in 3 different cubes, score X number of points based on how rare those are, and then you move off the board, and there's a whole set of bonuses you can get. So typically it's 2... resources? I don't know. Tokens? I'm not sure what to call them. So it's coal and whistles. You'll get 2 of those, and then you'll get a cube. So the starting ones, the first players can pick anything they want, and then it kind of gets limited from there, and it decreases whistles to coal. So there's kind of a hierarchy there. This person who goes out sooner will do that. And then the second space that there is on the side is there are some that are, when you move there, you score points for each stock certificate, but then you have to turn one in. So you can score a bunch of points without losing any resources, but then you turn those in. So you keep playing until either the rounds run out or somebody removes all their trains off the board. Then that'll be the last round. And then players score. You score for those bonuses. There's gold tokens you can get in the game. They're just randomly 3, 4, or 5 points. Reveal them at the end. Your rare resources are worth 3 points each. Your basic are worth 1. There's special tiles you can buy that give you bonus actions. So you can trade in goods to get those, and then they give you bonus actions, and then you can actually buy them from other players, and you get points for those at the end of the game. And I don't think I missed anything, but I may have. So that's what you score for at the end of the game. Total up your points and see where you're at. The game's good. The game's really good. I enjoyed it a lot at Dice Tower Con. It was probably my biggest surprise there. But I'd only gotten like demo and I had to leave in the middle, but I really enjoyed that. So then I have now gotten in a 3-player game, a 5-player game, a 2-player game, and maybe another one. I can't remember. 2-player was great. It was really fun. It's lightning fast. You're still making those same decisions. The interaction is there. There's definitely not a limit to it. And it's not so much bumping into players. That can't be it. It's more the tiles that they lay that force you in certain directions with your track, and then those stock certificates, and then just the speed that everybody goes at. Are they going to end the game early, and what's that going to look like? It gets really congested with 5 players, but not necessarily in a bad way. Oh, that's the other thing. If you keep the special tiles in your hand, you can lose 10 points. So you got to get those out on the board and use them. So that becomes kind of interesting. It's good. It's a solid medium-weight game. But it's really simple to play. The complexity comes in making the decisions. So there's definitely AP. It never bothered me. I never was like, oh my gosh. The 5-player game, like a little bit on the first couple rounds of like, all right, come on. But I mean, everybody's learning, asking questions, whatever. And then the speed was pretty good. You do take all your actions at once, which you could say like, oh, what if everybody took 1 action at a time? But it doesn't make sense because you can't plan that way. You can't plan, I'll move here. Oh, now they blocked me. You have to be able to do multiple things in a row to set up a little system. Otherwise, you'd just be frustrated all the time. Be too cutthroat. So I think at this point, having played it and playing with 2 and liking it, 5, I liked it. I probably would prefer it 4 and not so much 5, but whatever. Not a big deal. It probably ran 90 minutes with the 5 players. We played it in, 40 minutes with 2 players. Really fast. It's a buy. I'd say buy this game when it comes out. It's really good. It's really fun. It's a fun night. Not a heavier stock game. Not crazy. Probably too much to teach as kind of a gateway game. But it's not bad. It's pretty intuitive. The theme works perfectly. It's pick up and deliver, which is not one of my favorite things, but it works great here because it's like the whole goal. Like the game is ending by you doing that. So it's not like, I'll just endlessly deliver these things. Like you're actually moving across a board. So it just kind of makes sense. You're picking up the cubes and lots of clever things you can do there. So yeah, Whistle Stop is great. If you ask me, I thought it was super fun. It would be a buy to me. So pick that up. A couple of the games I got to play Medici the card game again. I got to play Pyramids from Yellow Games. That was really interesting. Our game ended 58-57-56. So I'll try to report back on that if I get to play some more here with people. Spirit Island again, still really good. So Spirit Island's biggest fault now is it's too easy for me. I win even with new players, like not explaining to them what to do. It is really daunting at first. The first 2 turns, 3 turns are like overwhelming, and then you just cruise. It's pretty hard for us to lose now. I want to be careful. It's not that people shouldn't be able to. But yeah, that's where that one is at. And I haven't gotten to play Champions of Midgard yet again, so I want to play that again before I report out, but I definitely expect to get a play in here in the next 2 weeks. So I will let you know on that. So that's what I've been playing. Some stuff with my daughter, learning some new things, cleaning, and just generally getting excited and playing some stuff at the store and whatnot. Got to play Valletta again. That was really good. So, yeah. There's that. All right, so let's jump in. So the topic that I have this week, and it's funny, I'm thinking, like, should Brian be here for this? Probably, but I could talk about this on another episode with him as well. But I really want to talk about, like, what should a good local FLGS have and what has changed. So let's start with what has changed. So board gaming has changed. Board gaming is definitely aiming itself at everyone. There are adult games, there are family games, there are party games, there are kid games. Those things have always existed. Sorry, when I say adult games, I mean adult strategy games. There's also adult games. but that's not what we're talking about. So it's hit that whole gamut, but it's on the rise. You're seeing games in major department stores. You're seeing different styles of game. You're seeing strategy games. You're seeing all sorts of things. People are wanting to play games more. People are wanting to sit down. I think people are on their phones and computers all day, and if they can find a Friday night to do something, I think it could be a hangout spot, like a board games at a bar. At a store, at a restaurant, at somebody's house with good food. I think if you're surrounding it with an event, people are really interested in that. So I think that's definitely happening. I know that it's becoming more inclusive. There's more people included in the hobby. It's not just, hey, the guys are going to go play miniatures games in the basement at the store or whatever. It's more than that now. There are people of different ethnicities. There are people of different backgrounds. There are people of different lifestyles. There are people of different genders playing more games and playing together. So the expectation there is different, and you're starting to pool people. So there's lots of different people, and FLGS have a responsibility to follow that. It's no longer just, here's the Magic the Gathering crowd, here's the miniatures game crowd, and here's the kind of like other crowd for certain events that will come and do things. There's more to it than that. So I think it's really important that that we respond to that. So first and foremost, what does a store need? It needs to be friendly. It needs to be friendly from the outside, the look, the parking lot, what everything's going to be. It needs to be friendly when people walk in. Somebody needs to say hi to them. How are you doing? Do you need any help? Those kind of things. Welcome. We're so glad you're here. So friendliness, I think, is the key. If there's going to be events there, the staff, the people who are helping, the other players need to be friendly to people. I think that's just super key, that it's a place you want to be. It's a place where people want you. Not overwhelming. I have this issue sometimes. I'm at the store. I love to just help out, and I'll just go up to people and just be like, what kind of games do you play? Oh, we like cooperative games. Oh, let me go through every cooperative game I know. And it's a little too much. So I even have to be careful. Like, that's a little over the top. But I think all those things there. Well lit. It's clean. There's bathrooms. It's clear where things are. Things are well delineated. There's stock. There's organization. Yeah, all that stuff. It's clear that this is a place where people should be. People should be existing. So the place itself needs to be friendly, have a great ambiance and atmosphere, which can vary. I don't think the Portal has the greatest of ambiance. I think there's things that could be better there in terms of that in some ways. But it definitely has that space, which is really good at something like the Portal. So even if there isn't this beautiful lighting and amazing tables to play on, there's lots of space. It's clear that this is a place where people play, and you are welcome to play, in my mind. You can tell me different. I'm speaking from experience of that. All right, so with all this inclusivity, it needs to be a place for all people, okay? So things are going to happen, and it's not always going to work out that way. But it needs to be encouraged that the parking lot is safe at night, or there's something, or there's light, or something that people are going to feel okay. People are welcomed when they come in. The various events that happen in the store are not closed groups. These need to be basically open groups, or at least something that I could sign up for. If I show up on a given day and a tournament is running and it filled up that week before, hey, that's my bad. But there was time for me to sign up, not, oh, we're just going to fill this up and not have space for people to play. If there's an open gaming group there, it needs to be an open gaming group that people can come in and play. People need to be welcomed. The expectation needs to be set. That's going to come from the staff and whatnot, that we're going to have all people play. Kids are going to be playing here. Women are going to be playing here. Men are going to be playing here. You know, language is going to be appropriate. Now, look, it's going to happen. At 10:15 on a Thursday night at the store, somebody's going to yell a profanity across the room. It's going to happen. Is it what you want to have happen? No. Is it the most major of deals? No. But that group that's coming on Saturday morning-ish afternoon, that's going to play, be rowdy, you know, push people out of the way, have a lot of profanity, that group can't be there. That group can't exist. That's too much. They need to be known what is an expectation for that time of day in terms of what's happening. What else with welcoming all people? Why is that important? It's important that we're welcoming all people because games need to be a place that are fun. It's not a place where we need to worry about our issues, about everything on the table. If I can't sit down and play a game with you because I disagree with you or because you're different from me, then what can I do with you if I can't play a game? So that just needs to be super important that that can be done and that we can do that together. Because if we can't do that, how are we going to have any conversation about anything? How are we going to progress anywhere? And in a place like America where there's all these different people, that's going to be there. So I'm hoping this isn't necessarily political on my part. It probably is in some sense, but that's not my point. But just, if we can't do that basic thing, what's the point? Now we all know the picnics that go awry and the Thanksgiving dinners, so it happens. But a gaming should be a place where we can come in, we can have fun, everybody can play, you know, to a certain extent. I'm not going to invite anybody to play my Twilight Imperium 4 game, you know, just because they were there. So that could be a preset event, but that might not even be something that happens at the store anyway. Or again, maybe there were signups or whatnot. There's an expectation. Hey, this is a game, but it's for anybody who is a veteran of the game. And that, I don't think that's bad to say in terms of that. But we need to be thinking that way and including people and not having people stand around wondering if they're invited while they're there. It needs to be clear, like, oh yeah, see that group right back there? That's where you can go and you can ask for so-and-so. They'll help you out. Those kind of things. Yeah, I just am so strong on the everybody needs to play. You know, I want games to be for everybody, not for the people who figured them out or figured out that they exist or allow other people to play. I want that access to be there. All right, store needs to have exciting, both large and small events. I think this is really important. So there needs to be some large event that we're really excited about. We want to pack the house. It's really important. There's a major piece, a charity. There's people. Like, we had Dice Tower in, so that's going to be important. Or this is a huge event for Warhammer, and we're going to have people from all over New England, and you want to be there with big prizes. So it's really big, exciting, large tournaments. Sometimes those Warhammer things have, like, shut down the store. There's no other gaming because this is important. This is happening. Same with Magic openings. You know, new sets, that's going to be important for people. So it goes across all the different things. So there needs to be those large events, but there also needs to be small events that are exciting. So every week, there is an expected event for your thing that you want to do. I guess I'm going from the customer there. But there needs to be for all of your customer base. There needs to be something happening. So meetup groups are great for this for board games. Meetup groups are great for this for miniatures games. Even just helping people to have a place like on Facebook where they can discuss what's going to be played if they want to set up games for miniatures there. There needs to be drafts and tournaments and things for Magic and whatever other games are popular. Force of Will, your LCGs, your other games that are happening. Those need to be available to people every week to be able to do. So it needs to be a place of events. I mean, honestly, people can go somewhere else and buy games and possibly cheaper, but they're going to come to your store because there's events, there's fun things happening. It's exciting. And this is something that the portal does so well. I mean, there's constantly small events. There's meetups every week, twice a week at the store. And then there's those large, exciting events. Describing them. There's things the store is supporting outside the store to get into the community. I think that's so important. Like the library. We're doing a DevOps thing soon. Lots of other places. Train shows. Other things like that. And then you need to have demo games, you need to have library for people to play, and you need to have knowledgeable staff. Now, all of these can vary. You could not necessarily have somebody who's demoing games or setting those up all the time. Your library could be thin, but be being worked on or constantly kept up, or I don't know. Or what people are asking for and playing would be fine, even if it's became pared back. And the knowledge of your staff can't be perfect. You're not going to hire people that know everything about everything. But they at least could get back to people. They would know the basics of what they need to know. How do I order this for somebody? How do I get this for somebody? What have I heard about these things that are popular? Or what's going to be popular so I can help people to know? They should be able to answer that question. I'm looking for this for such and such an age. You know, I'm going to a birthday party today. What should I get for kids? We're having a whatever party for adults. What should I get for this game? We're having people over this night. What would be good, et cetera, et cetera. They need to know those things. So those are really important because that's why people are coming, to get access to that knowledge, to those demo games, to that library, having those things set up. And then this is probably where we struggle the most, I would say, but food and food access. So there needs to be some way that people could get food. It's fine if people leave the store and come back in some sense, but you want them to be able to stay there. So ultimately, being a cafe, I think it's huge. Just a place where you can serve your own food. Fortunately, at the portal, that's not possible. We're not able to do that. Snacks, drinks, that stuff is available. And then we just have a book where people can order food, and these are all the places you can order in, and people have rated different things in the menus so people know what's good, what's bad. And that just keeps people there playing. Okay, so that's like a crazy, you know, marketing scheme. Like, how are we going to keep people here playing? But honestly, that's what you want to do. You want people to feel like they don't have to leave because they have access to good, solid food, things they're looking for, and they can stay there and hang out. That's friendly. That's hospitable more than it is despicable, which is a terrible word. But more than it is marketing to people. You're just saying, hey, this is available. We're not making you go all this distance and do all these things. You know, we have this available for you. I think ultimately that we serve food and good food, teaming up with somebody would be the best. I know it's something that Brian and I have talked about, and it's just a tricky spot with what we have right now. But, you know, still there, still available for people. So that's kind of my list of what a good local FLGS should have. And when I go down that, for me, the portal, this is why it's the place that I support, the place that I like to play so much, because most of these things are there, they're being worked on, they're thought about. This is what we're doing. It's not the biggest of stores, it's not the best ambiance, like I said, but these things are happening all the time. So, yeah, that's kind of my heart about all that stuff, I suppose. That sort of reminds me, so I wanted to get Brian's word on some of that and see what he would cross over. There's definitely other things. This list is not exhaustive, but those are kind of the things that when I think of what a good LGS should have, that is it to me. So let me know what you think. You can send me an email, portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com, with what you're thinking and what makes sense to you and all those kind of things. But I think that's it. So short episode this week, I know, but got through all that. So yeah, I am the Brant. And until next episode, we hope you step into the portal. Portal Game Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on September 26, 2017. Please send any questions to us at portalgamepodcast@gmail.com. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Thanks for listening.